Roland Smith here with Carl Sabatino. Carl, I have a... listen to this. Listen to this headline. You can't get rich while breaking the 40 laws of money.
That's a heck of a headline.
Well, it is. And it's written, it's a book written by the 40 Unbreakable Laws of Money, written by Wayne Wakefield. He's CEO of Nevada Business Corporations. And we're going to have him, he's a guest on the line right now to talk about what some of those laws are and what they mean in today's society. So welcome, Wayne, to Smith Sabatino.
I'm honored to be on your show. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, we too are honored. What are some of the laws, the 40 laws that you're talking about?
Well, there's what I had found is that in the last 30 years that I've been in financial services and in business, I found that there was 40 laws that if you do not follow them or you break them, you will fail in business and in the money game.
Woo.
And it's profound because as I was going through the years, I called them rules at that time, and then I found out that they were steadfast laws, and that I started identifying so many people out there breaking these, and then they were trying to figure out why they were failing in the money game.
Could you give me an example of a couple of them and how people have broken them and how they failed?
Well, I'll pick Law 12 here. You will always make the wrong decisions when you're angry or emotional. And people think, well, they can all relate to anger. I mean, we all can, saying the wrong thing, doing the wrong thing. But emotional can be positive or negative. And so if you if you're all excited and warm and fuzzy about buying a home or buying a car, or you're excited about getting into that next business venture or investing, and you are already in a position that you are breaking a very substantial law, because generally you will always make the wrong decision because your emotions are all involved in that.
Huh. Well, you say in your book that you must be in business to open up the financial world. Would you explain that, please?
Yeah, that's actually the number one. It's not a law, but it's a number one rule. You can never put together financial independence or amass any kind of wealth if you are not in business. If you remain an employee, and I don't mean jumping out of your job and starting a business, but you need to add a company or a business along with your job if you're doing that. Because people who are getting W-2 wages are paying the highest taxes, have the highest liability, but if you open a business, now the whole world, financial world, opens up to you. This is gold, and that's one reason my company, Nevada Business Corporations, we set people up all over the country. Actually, we have international clients in Nevada because it's a tax-free jurisdiction, and we set that that foundation so that they can take the laws of the book that I have put in there to start building and start building and putting some wealth together so they don't end up failing when they're 65 or 70, 80 years old.
Mr. Wakefield, I have a question. Today there are a lot of, I'm going to use the term middle-aged, whatever the heck that, whatever range you consider middle age, but they've gotten involved in what I call cottage industry businesses, not necessarily businesses that are made to amass great wealth, and some of these people live very nicely, very comfortably, and they have it could be a small flower business. I know one woman who designs bottles for the wine industry, for labeling, for specialized wine gifts and that kind of thing. And frankly, she does near six figures a year, and she's very happy with that. Now, in the laws, in your 40 laws, do you take into account that those marginal players who aren't necessarily looking to advance wealth per se, but are doing very comfortably and live in that margin, if you will? Is that taken into consideration?
Yeah, actually, that's the when we set up corporations for people, that's usually the medium income people are usually who we are helping. We help the high end as well. But what I have found is that people who get themselves in those kind of businesses are not incorporated. And what they do is they take, if you're not incorporated and you're operating as a sole proprietor, you're taking a bloodbath on federal, state, and especially self-employment taxes. And they don't realize that just by restructuring what they do and how they take their money, it saves them tens of thousands of dollars in taxes each year. And I'm talking about legal structures. I've been doing this for 30 years, so this isn't new for me.
That's fascinating.
Which laws would you say are best for those who have problems managing their money?
The Law 12 that I just talked about.
Right.
Because people, when they get their emotions all caught up in it, like the ladies, they're the ones that are the last word on the houses. And it better have a good, actually you should be able to live in the kitchen and also even more live in the closets. But us men, we love our cars. We go out and hug our cars at night. You get caught up in doing that, you will make wrong and very poor and sometimes devastating financial decisions. One other is that I talk about, and it's not one of my laws, but it's another rule, is, and one thing that I train on is how to get out of debt with credit cards. Not in debt with credit cards, how to use your credit cards to get out of debt. You have to have a different mindset. The wealthy don't think the same way the average person does out there, and it's because none of us were ever taught anything about money coming out of high school or college. It's a travesty that we are not teaching in our schools the one thing we spend the rest of our lives trying to master, and that's this thing called money.
If you could go back 40 years, 50 years, whatever the heck it is, what law would you tell the younger you that you should definitely obey?
Well, that's why I put it as law number two, is if you can't change your friends, change your friends. I have lost more money and had more grief by hooking my wagon to the wrong people. And I've lost millions of dollars doing that. But now that I follow that law and I recognize and take the time to recognize when those people are coming, I nicely separate them. And unfortunately, some of these people are your friends and family, and you have to sometimes love them from a distance.
Does that mean we're finished, Carl?
We're done.
<Got it. laughs>
But I can say this, in listening to you, you take a very, very direct approach to what is probably, it almost seems to be unique to this country. Everyone sees opportunity. There's a pot of gold around every adventure and every idea. And it seems to be unique, and I've lived around the world, as Roland knows, for a number of years. They don't seem to have the same kind of drive that we do that places us in harm's way many times financially. To take that risk to go for the gold, if you will. It seems to be uniquely American. Is there anywhere in your 40 laws where going for the gold has certain parameters that we should abide by?
Boy, you covered a lot of ground there. The thing that people have to know is that you cannot just read a book and become financially independent. That's now the reason why I wrote 40 Unbreakable Laws of Money is because I got tired of watching people taking a bloodbath in business and in money. When I tell people, I said, I'll show you how to get out of debt with credit cards. They think I've just got off the drug truck. because you're supposed to get in debt with them. No, if you do something different. Another thing that I train on, and actually I'm filming right now, is how to get paid $3,000 to $5,000 to own your car. Who told you you had to take a loss on it and go with your hat in your hand to qualify for a loan? I have never done that. In fact, I haven't had a car payment since '92, and I get paid to own my cars. Plus, I run them through my corporations, so they're fully deductible. And so I have training on 40laws.com, which is my website, that actually takes people step by step through these, and it's a 12-month process, but it takes them step by step so that they can learn not to shoot themselves in both feet in the forehead, not only as running a business or just handling their finances or money, but causing, in fact, one of my laws is 29, you do not want to raise the ire of the IRS.
Well, how true. Wayne Wakefield, thank you so much for sharing this, and I hope you come back and visit us again, because I think this is a topic that we ought to continue to talk about on Smith Sabatino.
Absolutely. Thank you. And they can, by the way, you can get the book at Amazon.com, Walmart.com. You can order it, and it'd be a great Christmas gift.
We got
it. Give somebody that's worthwhile to change their life.
You got it. Thank you very much.
Thank
Wayne.
You, Wayne. Thanks so much. Carl Sabatino, Rollins Smith, Smith Sabatino. We're back.
America Weekend. Where are they now? With Ahmad Rashad.
She was the captain of the first women's Olympic hockey team to win gold and retired as the international career leader in goals and assists.
A place for me didn't even exist when I first came along. When the ice opens up in front of me wide and wild, I just don't see anything in my way.
So where is Cammy Granato now? Cammy is married to former NHL player Ray Ferraro, with whom she has two sons. In 2007, she won the Lester Patrick Award for her contribution to hockey in the U.S., becoming the first woman to win the award solo. And in 2010, was one of the first two women elected to the International Hall of Fame.
We love the game just as much as the men do. You're changing the face of women's hockey alone by accepting us into this prestigious club.
Cammy Granato, a modern-day American trailblazer. I'm Ahmad Rashad.
The Movie Man. 6-second DVD review starts now.
22 Jump Street is the same as 21. Hilarious. And Tatum and Hill will be partying all the way to the bank. By me.
Harry and Lloyd are back and dumber than ever. Dumb and Dumber 2, rated PG-13, now playing.
Think Green. Harrison with you. In a curious move, both American and Japanese researchers have recreated the killer 1918 flu pandemic, which killed up to 100 million people worldwide, more than the bubonic plague in the 13th century. But why recreate it? The National Academy of Sciences says the discovery could reveal mutations that might turn an ordinary flu into a deadly pandemic strain. Researchers say they now know what made the original flu so deadly. Turns out a group of three genes lets the flu virus invade the lungs, causing pneumonia. The good news? By mixing genetic material from preserved lung tissues of three 1918 victims, along with modern flu viruses, they feel the study might help in the development of new flu drugs. Because most flu experts agree that a pandemic of influenza will almost certainly strike again. From the Greeniverse.
Think Green with Harrison at thinkgreenradio.com.